Before we begin today's story, here's a word from a fellow podcaster.
I'm Rachel Everett Lazon.
And I'm Emily Barleen.
And we host a podcast called Horrible History.
We're morbidly curious individuals who love to do research.
And we really miss traveling.
So each week, we head to a new destination to learn something horrible.
Like cults, killers, and curses.
Prison experiments, plagues, and more.
So if you're a member of the morbid curious community, tune in every Thursday for well-researched historic tales about all things horrible.
Available everywhere you listen.
Hopefully, you're horrified.
My name is Talia Smith, and you're listening to Season 3 of Once Upon a Time, a storytelling podcast. There are stories all around. We tell stories every day. We consume books and movies, travel the digital landscape, and we talk to people. How could we connect without stories? I think it's impossible. This season, we explore all of what home can mean through sharing stories with a strong sense of place, love, family, or tradition. Join us for Once Upon a Time, a storytelling podcast, Season 3. This episode was recorded in Dublin, Ireland, and Maryland, USA, and it tells a love story through letters. Enjoy! Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the podcast. Today, I'm super excited. We have a wonderful guest, Liz McGuire. Liz is curator and creator of Flea Market Love Letters, a digital archive of vintage love letters. There are some 300 letters in the archive. Letters from both World Wars, the Great Depression, and the Roaring Twenties are photographed, transcribed, and shared. The archive began in 2017, and in 2020, Liz launched the Write More Letters Project, which is a fundraiser for U.S. veterans and military families. There's a vibrant community of love letters on the project Instagram page, and Liz would love to hear your letter stories. Welcome to the podcast, Liz.
I am so excited to be here. This is one of my favorite shows. I work in digital marketing, so this is one of my favorite shows to have on in the background, especially now that I'm working from home since last year, because it feels like you guys are just hanging out with me.
Well, thank you so much. Absolutely. We love just chatting. And I'm excited for this chat. It's going to be so much fun. Before we delve into the story, can you introduce us to the story? What are we going to be talking about today?
Sure. So this was actually the fourth collection that was shared on Flea Market Love Letters. So Flea Market Love Letters started in 2017. I started collecting love letters well before that. I was actually in high school when I got my first collection of letters. It was summer, and my mom gave me $20 to leave her alone at a flea market, and I promptly spent it on absolute nonsense and was bored in about 10 minutes. And I saw this guy had a table, and anyway, he had a bunch of letters in a shoebox, and it said, letters, $5. So I went over to her, and I was like, can I have $5 more? Again, full-blown teenager, like probably should have been mowing lawns or something at this point. But she came over with me and to humor me, basically. And what she saw was, you know, my kid loves books. My kid loves all this kind of nerdy stuff. She taught me to be that way. So she was like very into the idea of getting me these letters to archive and to put into chronological order and to read the story for that summer. So that was the first letter collection that sort of started Flea Market. But the letter collection that we'll be talking about today was actually the fourth to be shared. There's about 300 letters that have been published so far. I am hesitant to say, but it's probably likely that there's about 1,000 individual letters at present in the archive.
My gosh.
Yeah. Let that just wash over you.
So
these letters are from World War II. There was a period of time during the beginning of Flea Market Love Letters where flea market letters and all that, the most popular, if you want to call them popular, are World War II letters. So, you know, they're one of a kind. They're totally unique. But this was the fourth collection, and it was the fourth shared World War II series. So after this, we actually transitioned to a World War I series, our first World War I series. But this was the sort of, an addition to our World War II collection. Before this, we shared Stories of an English War Bride. We have an American GI's letters. He was actually present at the Nuremberg trials, and that's a fascinating window into that, you know, time of history. We have a U.S. soldier who's stationed in Italy over a number of days in 1944. And a little bit later, I'll kind of go into some of the timeline of World War II and how these letters matter. But these letters, the Jack, Betty, and Henry letters, are particularly fun because at times they have references to fashion and popular music. And it's very, you know, you can just kind of hear the jargon and the GI sort of back and forth and all that. But at other times they're incredibly poignant. So they're a very, very special collection to have, and we're very grateful to have them.
I love that. When I think of love letters, I immediately think of World War II. Maybe that's just the culture that I was raised around. So especially going through your website and reading these letters about Jack, Betty, and Henry, was so special because they feel so personal, but to be able to relive those is so magical in a sense. So I'm excited to learn more about it.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. And, you know, in the interest of lifting the sheet a little bit behind the scenes here, we have talked, yourself and myself, before about talking about this collection. And I have to say that the Flea Market Archive, we don't profit off of any of the letters. Even our Write More Letters fundraiser, 100% of the proceeds from any of the Write More Letters mugs, masks, shirts, totes, that all goes to charity. So, you know, I have a joke that I spend more than I should on old mail because it's I don't profit anything off of the letters other than kind of an appreciation for them. And, you know, just before we dive in here, these are real, honest to goodness human beings. So everything that I'm going to say and that I hope we discuss is with respect and with appreciation for Jack's service, Henry's service, Betty's, you know, service on the home front, all that sort of stuff. It's always said with respect and veneration for the letter writers.
Beautiful. I really appreciate you saying that. These are humans. These are real people. These people could be us and 50 years when they find all of our quarantine letters.
Exactly. Exactly. I get sometimes people ask, they're like, you know, you collect old letters. Does that mean you censor or you filter yourself in, you know, gift cards or letters that you're sending out now? And I'm like, nope. Some days I just open up with like, you know, stomach doesn't feel great this morning. And like, that's gonna be there for 70 years. Don't worry about it.
I think it makes it even more special to the unsuspecting reader to get those tidbits.
That's true. I think when we talk a little bit later, there are moments when you're archiving the letters where, you know, I'm often the first person who reads them outside of the collector who's maybe sold them, or, you know, along the lines of even maybe the first person who's read them in full since they were received. And there are just funny things that people put into messages or into letters.
So we're talking, as we said, about World War II. Specifically, I'm pretty sure these are between 1939 and what's the end date for your letters? 43? Okay. So to sort of set the scene, this is the depths of World War II. We're in it. The war starts in 39. The war ends in 45. And I thought I Googled some fun facts about 1939, and I thought I would share them with the group. So first, Batman made its debut in 1939. The Grapes of Wrath came out by John Steinbeck. Minimum wage was a mere 30 cents per hour. The Times Man of the Year was Joseph Stalin. Gone with the Wind and Wizard of Oz came out. And the Green Bay Packers won the NFL championship. This predates the Super Bowl.
You know, I didn't know that about the Super Bowl. I have to admit, my boyfriend is a comic book nerd, so I did know the Batman fact, but you pulled the rug out from under me with the other ones. Well done.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, I nothing if not a lover of fun facts. And shout out to the Green Bay Packers for staying in Green Bay since 1939. That's impressive. So, without further ado, let's begin the telling of this tale with my favorite phrase, once upon a time.
Oh, this is so romantic. I love it. It's perfect for love letters.
Yes.
So, these letters are between 1939 and 1943. As Talia outlined, you know, where the U.S. doesn't enter World War II until 1941 after the bombing of Pearl Harbor. So, you know, having these letters from 42 particularly, which is where the majority of the letters come from, is very poignant because it's the first year of service, really the first full year of service for many, many men, you know, out in the trenches for the first time. This is also 20 years after World War I has ended. So the country as a whole is recovering from the Great Depression and then is immediately slammed into the world theater of World War II. Mm-hmm. Which, of course, at the time, they don't know is World War II because they've had the Great War 20 years before. And this is kind of a rolling thing. It's just happening as it goes. And it'll get the title of World War II, obviously, afterwards. But one of the things I think that's very poignant to remember when you're reading these letters, any of the World War II letters, is that no one knew when it would end. So we're looking at letters in 42 and 43, particularly, that are... There's no way of knowing the end date of this, which I think is very similar to maybe how people are feeling during the pandemic, especially you don't have an end date.
Yeah, that's so true. I never thought of it in that way before, but you're absolutely right.
It's
makes it more unnerving.
I wake up most days, you know, kind of just getting yourself, you know, do the morning routine, get yourself ready. And then I think about the letters a lot. I think about how, you know, this isn't our war, but it's also a very surreal time to be living through history. And you have mentioned pandemic letters particularly, and that's something that hopefully we'll talk about a bit later. But back in World War II, we're going back to Jack, Betty, and Henry here. Mm-hmm. So of the 50 letters, I was gifted 5 in 2018, and I read them, and I knew sort of what happened to at least Jack. And I couldn't really sit with not getting the rest of the collection. So we got in touch with the dealer. He was from a New York flea market, and we got the rest of the series. So it was about 45, maybe 43 letters additionally. So I had 5 letters that I read, and immediately I had this feeling in my gut that this was going to be one of the more serious stories that Flea Market was going to handle, and how would we do that, and so and so forth.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's a tough one to talk about. And I've you know, like I said earlier, we talked about this kind of behind the scenes. It's war has consequences. And this is one of those series where maybe the guy doesn't come home. And that's a real pill to swallow when you're a romantic and you're kind of, you know, you have been collecting letters for a few years casually and you come across... Right. A real, honest to goodness, I hesitate to say love triangle, but a real love story, which is what this collection is.
I'm pumped. So how did you find the guy with the 43 other letters?
Sure. So letter collecting is very expensive, basically, because these are one of a kind. If you have a dealer who understands what they have, it can be upwards of $5 to $7 a letter, which isn't crazy when you're looking at, you know, 3 or 4. But as I mentioned, there's about, you know, I don't want to put a price on the archive because personally I think it's priceless, but there's about 1,000 letters in the flea market archive. So you're looking at quite a bang for your buck. So these letters were basically... My dad got 5 letters from a flea market in New York, got the guy's email. I came home from Ireland, where I live. We haven't mentioned that yet. I live in Ireland.
Okay, she lives in Ireland.
Sorry, I forgot that part. I came home for the summer and my dad was kind of like, hey, check out these letters. And the dealer knew, spoiler alert, the dealer knew that Jack died.
Okay.
So I got these letters and the deal was the guy dies. Let me know what you think if you want the rest of them. And I read them and I forget which ones were the first five. I didn't document it at the time. There was a poignancy to them because he talks a lot about that end, that, you know, when this is over, we'll get married. When this is over, we'll have a little house. You and I will be Mr. and Mrs., like all this kind of stuff. And there's one particular line, and I wish I had thought to grab it before, but basically he describes having a nightmare of not making it home. And, you know, it's intense.
Yeah.
It's intense. And it's made all the more so because it seems that this young woman, Betty, she's from North Gulford, Connecticut, I believe. I was looking this up before we jumped on the call. So the letters were sent to her in Connecticut. She seems to live with her parents. From what I can gather, she has a desk job. She's just sort of, you know, doing her work on the home front. And her boyfriend / fiance Jack is in the Marines in South Carolina. And if you know anything at all about military sort of fervor, the Marines are some of the toughest.
Yeah.
The Marines are, you know, not the ones you'd want to bump into. He's constantly kind of talking about his pride of being a Marine. Betty is always saying, you know, she's a Marines girl. And I should also sort of frame this from the idea that dating was a very different social thing in 1941, 1942, that sort of thing. So a lot of these guys, I don't want to say all of them because some of them didn't. I've read some of the letters where, you know, they marry the woman that they're writing to. But a lot of these guys were gone from hometowns they had never left. By the time they were 18, they were put on a boat, sent to, you know, the south of France.
Yeah.
And they were just shooting at Nazis for 2 years.
Right.
And they maybe got the address of, you know, their kid sister's friend, and they just hung on to this hope of writing their kid sister's friend or their neighbor girl or, you know, the lady who owns the shop next to dad's deli. Like there's whole webs of how relationships were built and sustained. And it seems that Betty was dating Henry and Jack maybe simultaneously, but cuts things off with Henry. The letters from 1939 that we have are from a Henry. I can't be confident if they're from the Henry that are from the 42 and 43 letters, because the penmanship is very different. The voice of the writer is, you know, you spend a lot of time with these letters, you kind of get a voice in your head. They sound different just because of the word choice and things like that. So
right.
I can't be sure that the 1939 letters are Henry. I do know that I think it was the summer of 1942. You know, Betty puts in a note to Jack early summer, I think June or May. She puts in a note to Jack that she's cut things off with Henry and Henry has really soured about this. But, you know, she's committed to Jack. So he knows about Henry. They could have, you know, been friends. They could have been from the same town. They could have never met. They could. There's a hole with letters. You never really, unless they drop a nugget in there, you never know.
That's so true. Could you imagine? You know how some people always only date people with the same name?
Yeah. Abundance of Catherines.
An abundance of Henrys in this case.
Oh my God. I never, all those years I read John Green, I never realized I'd be making a reference in relation to flea market.
Shout out to John Green. I hope you're listening.
The preeminent podcaster and weird story collector.
Yes.
So I have a line here that I think, you know, I'm not going to do it any justice, but I'll tell you maybe kind of the context of it. It's
sure.
From a 1942 letter. Again, like I said, all of Jack's letters are 1942. Any letters we have from Henry are 1943. And that's because of a fact I'll tell you in a little while.
Great.
But from this sort of quote, spring 1942, Jack has asked Betty for a photo. And he says, you know, all of them wanted your name, address, telephone number. But I said, sorry, boys, she's already taken. Definitely by yours truly, because we happen to be engaged. There was a long line of wows and woes because they all said, why do some guys get all the breaks? If they only knew how my heart is breaking, darling. Yeah, I got the breaks. I miss you ever so much, hun. So, yeah, I mean, how do you not fall in love with Jack after that?
And that the vernacular is so 1940s. I can, como se dice, what's his name? Jimmy Stewart. You can hear, like, Jimmy Stewart's voice just saying those words. I got all the breaks. I miss you ever so much, hon.
Oh, darling. Oh, God, yeah. No, it's it really gets you. It's one of the things that sort of endeared me. So obviously I would have read these well after I sort of knew what was happening. And to rewind the narrative of this a little bit, the way a collection at Flea Market works, I get about, you know, 50 or 60 letters, and they show up in a shoebox, in a plastic bag, in a binder, however they come to me. I take them out, put them into chronological order, and then I put them into binder sleeves so that I can kind of flip through, you know, see through binder sleeves so that I don't have to physically handle the letters as much, but I can sort of get an idea for what's going on. Mm. And I knew from those first five letters what happened, and I didn't tell anyone when I started publishing the Jack, Betty, and Henry letters because, like I said, this was one of the most serious stories that we had come up yet. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't going to start by teasing it with, you know, oh, this is a World War II love triangle and someone dies and what happens and all this kind of stuff. So I didn't say anything. But one of the great things about Flea Market is because it is not for profit, it's a public archive, it's a community. All of the information that I have, you have.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So there's, you know, I don't blur addresses or dates or anything like, so it's, you know, if you're an amateur genealogist, you can do the same research that I can. And a reader is actually the one that got in touch and said, you know, would you be able to confirm if this is Jack? I found him on, you know, this ancestry list of deceased or killed in service. And I have never done much more genealogy beyond that. I haven't felt comfortable. Again, it's a weird thing. You collect dead people's mail, but then you want to give them privacy about what happened afterwards. It's very weird.
Right.
Yeah, it's weird. But it was a reader of the project who ended up kind of, you know, privately messaging me. And then I revealed with Jack's last letter what had happened.
So speaking of the letters themselves, the story of Jack, Betty, and Henry seemed to be pretty one-sided in terms of perspective. Mm-hmm. So what we seem to know about them kind of come from the male perspective. We don't get a lot of Betty's letters, if what I'm getting is correct.
Yeah. So it's very rare to have, I guess, kind of the another interesting part about this trio is we have letters from all three, but we don't have a response to every letter from all three or from two. So you have one letter from Jack to Betty, 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 Henry to Betty, and then there's a particularly sort of heartbreaking series where a number of Betty's letters to Jack are returned to her, which is why I think it's pretty safe to assume this is Betty's ultimate collection, because there's several reasons the letters could be returned. They seem to be predating when he's killed. Again, this is assuming that he is killed. This is the Jack that has been found.
Right.
If Jack is out there alive and his grandkids listen to this and they come to me and they're like, you're running your mouth, my grandpa's dead. I'm sorry, Jack. But all facts seem to point towards this, particularly the returned unopened mail. As well as the shift in Betty's attentions in 1943. So Jack is believed to have died in 1942, in the latter half of 1942, while in the service. And in 1943, we see more letters coming from Henry. We see a playfulness and a flirtiness coming back to that sort of dialogue that when these letters were first published on Flea Market, a lot of the readers sort of grieved Jack. Because we were reading a lot of his sort of very sweet, like that line from that section from above is, it's quite a gut punch if you know what's going to happen. And yeah, so we know that she has letters from Jack, Betty, and Henry. We do have some from Betty, but they are unopened and they are, poignant to read as well.
When it comes to the content of these letters, in addition to that kind of heart-wrenching quote from Jack, what do we get? What do we learn about Jack and Betty and Henry from these letters? What do we learn about their relationship with each other, even if, you know, if you feel comfortable sharing about that?
Yeah. So from sort of an analysis perspective, from what I can say, I as a lapsed English major, if you're reading for context, Jack is wholly in love with Betty. And it's not the kind of energy where I've read letters from other collections where, you know, your guy is writing three different dames on the weekend and he's getting different perfume scented papers. Like it's nothing like that. It is a whole and real connection. And, the kind of promises back and forth are that they'll get married, that they'll have this house, that they'll have a future. And that's very common to find in war letters, because many of the guys couldn't write the reality of what they were experiencing. So they sort of slipped into this fantasy world, whether it's writing to mom and dad about remembering Father's Day or hanging on to a memory of life before the war. There's a real fantasy element to it. So like I've said, there seems to be in Jack's letters a real awareness that he could die. And that's sort of what makes it all the more harrowing, these promises and exaltations of love that are sort of bookended by, I hope I get home.
Gosh, everything you're saying is just makes it so much sadder.
I know. It's this is when you guys said you wanted to talk about this. I was like, okay, yeah. Strap in. It's a doozy.
But it's great because, it's real. And that's like the tragic reality of not just World War II, but of war, but also of human nature. I'm curious to know too, if, with Jack's devotion towards Betty, first of all, this is a bit of a side note. I love that she's named Betty. It just makes it even more World War II. But I digress. When it comes to Henry, or one of the Henrys, either of the Henrys, an abundance of Henrys, are we getting that same type of devotion? Are we getting that same, when we get married, when we have our house, in our future? Or is it a little bit more jovial? Is it less intense?
You've hit the nail on the head. It's the latter. It's much more joking. It's different. And you can see the different men in the different ways that they write, the different things that they write. But you can definitely tell where the path divides, sort of. And it's interesting, Betty would be kind of like your own friend, where you'd like meet maybe her ex and then the guy she's seeing now, and you'd be like, he ain't there. Wait, what were you, what? Like they are, what? One rides a motorcycle, the other rides a horse. I don't understand how this, where is the, one is blonde, the other is brunette. Like, what is the vibe? And, maybe it's the bad boy and the good guy. And I have to hesitate to kind of contextualize it, because they are real people. And again, maybe Betty and Henry's grandkid is kicking around somewhere and they're going to be like, oi, Pops was a good guy. Stop running your mouth. So, you can read into it, which, what you would, But I can definitely say from an analysis perspective, they are very different men.
Wow. Do you have any quotes from a Henry letter that you'd like to share that maybe shows off a little bit of his personality?
I'll actually point people towards the site for that, because I think reading a Henry quote out of context is far less romantic than a Jack one, because Henry quotes usually are very much like, you know, he might say something along the lines of like, oh, you took my joke in the last letter too seriously, lighten up. And because you don't always have the last letter before that. And also you have to think about gender roles in 1943. There's a lot of different ways that you can interpret things. So I have a lot of Jack's kind of, I would call them pull quotes or lines that really just get you. But Henry, to do him a service, I would say, you know, spend a little while with his letters, and he might be, you know, like that friend that you, when they get up to go to the bathroom, you know, when you're out for drinks or something, you're like, he's just uncomfortable. When he settles in, he'll be fine.
Yep. Oh my goodness. I love it, because it just reminds us that like people are people, and some people think they're funny and some people don't find that funny.
And I think the thing ultimately is that, you know, Henry and Betty end up together, and I trust Betty's instincts, and she doesn't strike me as someone who, you know, would have taken a lot of flack. And there's even from June 8th, 1942, Betty has broken up with Henry at this point, and she says, I got another letter from Henry last Thursday. It got me so mad that I told him off. I'm nice to everybody, but when I do get mad, look out. I wrote him a very snippy sort of letter and told him I was sick of hearing him feel sorry for himself because we broke up. So, like, Betty wasn't messing. And so that's June 8th, 1942. And we unfortunately know kind of, you know, that comes from around the window where Jack passes away. So it's a little bit harder to read, to know that she's maybe writing someone who isn't ever going to reply.
Oh. Do we know where, I mean, I'm sure we don't know exactly, but reading the tops of the letters, you get a little bit sense of location and place. And we know Betty's probably writing from her home, but where are her lovers? Where are they stationed around the world? Where are these stories coming from in that sense?
So here's a wild, wild kind of very amateur way of explaining this. You basically like mailed your letters to basic training camps, as I understand. So like they would get, if the guy was in basic training in South Carolina, you would mail your letter to South Carolina. Easy enough. But from what I can kind of understand, there was a point where you would mail your letters maybe to a hub, and then at the hub they were sorted by the regiment number or the identification code that you included in the several lines of return address or address. One of the reasons that this happens is because this allows censors to get to the letters that are coming from the front before they get to sweethearts in the States. And this is another reason that it's possible those unreturned letters or those returned letters, those unopened returned letters to Betty, could have just been kind of misplaced, because there was a tradition in World War II love letters of numbering your letters. So you could, in another collection I have a woman who wrote two letters on June 15th, and those are numbered like, you know, 12 and 13, because those are the 12th and 13th letter that she sent. And there's other noted nonfiction collections of letters that have people saying, you know, like, oh, I've received letters 11, 14, and 15, but I haven't gotten 12 and 13, and that sort of thing. So the mail itself was very tricky to navigate. And kind of the best bet that you had was using a soldier or a Marine's specific identification code or their regiment code.
Okay. Wow. That's Just think how easy we have it today.
The last thing I'll say about mail, I love mail, is one of the kind of sweet things that developed out of World War II was sweethearts putting stamps upside down. So it's believed that it was a sort of code, and enough letters with upside down stamps to sort of indicate that it could have been an I love you or, you know, I'm thinking of you sort of additional piece to the letter. So I won't say for certain they're on Jack and Betty's letters because I don't want to misquote myself, but I do know that that was a popular thing to do.
Aw, that's cute.
Yeah, it's a fun little touch.
Yeah, that's something to keep a note of in the future when I'm writing my... When I'm writing my love letters.
I think you put the stamp on upside down. That was on purpose.
That was on purpose. It's because I love you. Don't you understand?
We haven't said it yet, so it was really awkward, but there you go.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. We have another beautiful Jack quote that you have here in our episode sheet. Would you like to read it?
I would. This one is particularly tough. I've been around it enough that I'm not desensitized to it, but I think I have a different relationship to it now. But it's a doozy.
Okay.
So this is from August 13th, 1942. And it says, "If I stop to realize I most likely won't see your beautiful face before me until the end of this war, I almost go crazy. But my only consolation is yet in the fact that I know you'll still be there when I get back."
Oh, punch in the gut. Punch in the gut.
It's a hell of a line because it comes with the only photograph that I have from this collection. Very rarely photos are preserved with the letters. Often they go on walkies as soon as a letter arrives, which you can imagine. It's 1943. You haven't seen your son in 2 years and he sends you a photo of him in Hawaii. Of course you're going to be like taking it out in your wallet and showing everybody.
Right.
So very rarely letters with photographs, I almost never get intact. Letters that describe photographs, like 40% of the time, which is vicious because it's just, you know, a description of what is in the photograph, but you never get the photograph.
Oy. Could we possibly put the picture on our social media?
You can. There's always just a little disclaimer that, you know, real people, the usual stuff. This is a particularly tough one because it is from the collection. Jack's last letter that we have to Betty. We don't know if it was his last letter to Betty, period, because letters could have gone missing. But it is the last letter from Jack to Betty.
That's kind of poetic that the last letter that we have has the picture, has that devastating quote. Wow.
It gives you perspective. I know that we're going to talk about how letters are romantic and all, and kind of how they're portrayed in popular culture. And I'm jumping the gun on this one, but when I was about, 13, 14, I discovered the masterpiece, which is the Ryan Gosling film, The Notebook.
Oh, yes.
It was my Bible. I brought that thing to sleepovers. I was like, we're watching this.
Oh my gosh.
I am a few turns of the sun shy of 30 now. And it wasn't until this summer that I realized, that weird obsession I had with The Notebook might be why I'm obsessed with World War II love letters.
That's so true. Because that's the epitome of love letters in film.
It's a real, when that happened, I was like, water is wet. That makes a lot of sense.
Before we get talking about more of these romantic love letters that we see in film, TV, etc., is there anything else you want to say about Betty, Jack, and Henry to wrap it up, to put a little ribbon on this story, on this journey?
I do. And I don't know if I have ever mentioned this because it is not something I personally found. So I'm a little reluctant to kind of, you know, cherry on top it, but the reader who believes that they found details of Jack's death also went on to confirm, or they believe confirm, that Henry and Betty get married.
Wow.
And there's a very, you know, the skeptic in my head says, don't say this. But the romantic in my heart is like, oh my God, tell them. there's a very slim chance that Betty might have had a son that she named Jack.
Oh my God.
So this, again, real people. I haven't verified any of this. This could all be like, let's put the disclaimer in there.
Yes, absolutely.
But if that is the case, hot damn.
Oh my gosh. Wow, it could be a movie.
It's a real, real twist.
Also, in my heart, I want this to be a third Henry. I want this to just be another Henry in Betty's life, just because I think that's funny.
That she doesn't marry 1940s Cad Henry?
I want her to marry, like, a random Henry that she meets, like, after the war. just to add to her list of Henrys I've fallen in love with.
There's a few letters in the collection that aren't, which is why it's hard to say if it is indeed Betty's. Because there's a few letters that are to Jack's mom, which is weird because you wouldn't have those. And I think there's one from, again, there's 50. So forgive the vague. But I believe there's one maybe from Jack's mom to Betty. And if I'm remembering correctly, I think it's dated after when he could have died, but it doesn't have any sort of like grand gestures in it. One of the kind of, you know, mundane details of life that letters capture are the fact that soldiers' pay was accrued. So basically you would be paid X number per day and then you would get your paycheck. But there wasn't very many places to spend it on base. So a lot of the soldiers and Marines and vice versa sent it back home through the form of like bonds and vouchers and things. And I believe, if I'm remembering, it could be a different collection, but I think it's this collection. Jack's mom is talking to Betty about money that Jack has sent home for her. Now, that could mean Jack is alive and well in 1942 and there are missing letters in 1943 where, you know, Betty finds out that he, you know, God forbid, has another woman on the side and that's how this ends. But all points indicate that, you know, he unfortunately joins 30,000 Marines, which are killed during the U.S. service of World War II.
Wow.
Are you happy? Are you cheery?
Those weren't the words I would use to describe how I feel.
But you're rosy.
I feel grateful that you are able to share these stories. They're so beautiful, and I think it shows so much about human nature. And one of the things I'm passionate about in my pursuit of history and storytelling is to show and to share that people are people. And, you know, just because somebody's from history or from another time period doesn't mean they didn't think or feel or laugh or make weird jokes. That's just how we are as human. And I think this story just beautifully exemplifies that. So I don't feel happy about it, but I feel grateful that I've been able to hear it.
Yeah, I think you put that really beautifully. Well done. You're the right person to talk to about flea market love letters. If you're not walking away going, you know, just swearing me out under your breath. If you're on the level of, you know, this is a glimpse into history and history is very real. You're the right person.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that. All right. So now that we've digested, gone into analyzed this real life love story between Betty and Jack and Henry and the other Henry and possibly another Henry, who even knows. Let's talk about the story's impact and how it's relevant to today. Because as you mentioned before, love letters are kind of the basis for a lot of great movies and I guess books, with The Notebook being the one that is probably the most beloved.
Nearest and dearest to my heart, Talia. That's the subtitle. The Notebook. Nearest and dearest to Lizzie's heart.
Another one of my favorites is Letters to Juliet.
What a pure choice. I'm obsessed.
Thank you. It's one of my comfort movies. I love it. I think there's something, if you're unfamiliar with Letters to Juliet, it stars Amanda Seyfried plays this woman who goes on like a pre-honeymoon with her fiance, blah, 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 blah. She finds there's a society of women who answer letters that women write to Juliet. She finds a letter. She's like you. She finds a letter and she falls in love with the story. But then she ends up finding the woman who wrote it and she ends up falling in love. And I just love it. I actually wrote a letter to Juliet, because you can write letters to Juliet, like in the movie.
As you should.
And I wrote, and they wrote me back. And I'm like, this is the coolest thing.
Did they mail it from Italy?
Yes, they did.
Oh, that's so fun. What a great, tangent marketing brain on. What a great business model.
I know. You should contact them. Be like, do you have any letters?
Do you need any weird obsessive letter fans? Hi, how are you?
I think you should do it. Why not? Shoot your shot.
We've talked a little bit about P.S. I Love You, which is, of course, set in Ireland.
Yes. Yes, your stomping ground.
The bucolic hills of Ireland with Gerard Butler and his Jennifer, what's her name? Hillary Swank.
Let's talk about devastating stories about letters.
And you've got Dear John down. I was like, God, Talia, you trying to, what?
I was thinking, like, what movies are about letters? And it's kind of poetic that they're all, besides Letters to Juliet, which is just delightful, these are three stories that are devastating.
Oh, 100%. The Notebook is not a happy movie.
No, it's not. I always feel for the other guy, the soldier who's so handsome and he plays the prince in Enchanted.
Isn't his name Cal or something?
Yes, the guy, the character is Cal. I always felt bad for him. I was like, poor Cal. He seemed like such a nice guy, but he's no Ryan Gosling. So
my good man, if Ryan is on the menu, I will have two courses.
And then, you know, when I was doing research, just kind of Googling, like, movies about mail, You've Got Mail came up, which I think is a bit of a stretch, considering it's about email.
Yeah.
What do you think? What are your thoughts on email as mail?
So I am a big fan of access. So if email is the way that someone is able to exchange letters and thoughts and feelings, go for it. I'm a part of a program on Twitter. It's called Penpalooza. And it is a global pen pal exchange. So it was started by a woman named Rachel Syme, I believe is her last name. I've never actually heard her say her last name. Sorry, Rachel. but she is a writer for The New Yorker. And last summer, she realized that there were a lot of people who wanted to write letters, but necessarily didn't have anybody to write them to. And that's not, you know, like a big weepy thing. It's just kind of, you may have a lot of very close friends who, if they get a postcard from you, are going to be like, are you okay?
Right.
It can be easier to open up to a stranger. So when the pandemic was sort of in the heat of summer last year, she started Penpalooza. So Penpalooza has, I think there's like 11,000 people who've signed up now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's Penpalooza. So PENPALOOZA.com is the website for it. And it's still open. It's still running. Rachel does a lot of the matches via email, and I jump in sometimes and help people who maybe are looking for a pen pal in Japan or things like that. But there are people who write and say, you know, penmanship is hard for me to read, or I have bad eyesight, or, you know, there might be someone who isn't able to see and who needs to use software to translate their written messages into audio. And right. We always encourage, you know, snail mail is great, but if, as long as you're getting a letter out there, I would say You've Got Mail is a bit of a stretch, because to me it's more about basically the destruction of a small business.
That's true. You know, I've also seen You've Got Mail come up on movies based on Pride and Prejudice, and I'm like, I don't see it, but if that's what helps you understand Pride and Prejudice, I guess go for it.
You want to talk about letters? That letter in Pride and Prejudice, especially the Keira Knightley rendition, when she's standing and then it goes to nighttime and she's still in the mirror and it's daytime again? That is film.
Talk about, I think that's another really special thing. First of all, before I say that, I'm going to put the link to Penpalooza in our show notes. So if any of our listeners want to click to that and learn more about it, you can do it. But letters in books just are always, I just finished reading Anne of Windy Poplars, which is an Anne of Green Gables book. Okay. And most of that book is written as through letters. Like each couple chapters, you get like two like really long in-depth letters. And it just reminds you that that's how people communicated back in 1900 when these books are set. And it's kind of cool. But even more recently, we get, have you ever watched or read the To All the Boys I've Loved Before series?
So I have seen the trailers, but I am of the generation where the dad in that show, in that movie, oh my God, I'm so old in that show, where the dad in that movie was the love interest in Big Fat Greek Wedding, which is more my
another great film. I feel like we need to have a movie night one day.
This very morose podcast has devolved into just cackling about attractive men in films.
It's the best kind of conversation. Well, he plays the dad. What's his face? I don't even know his name. Whatever.
The dad.
He plays the dad. But this story is about a girl in high school who, when she was younger, she wrote love letters to all of her crushes. And she made the fatal mistake of addressing them and putting a stamp on them. No. Then her little sister, when Lara Jean is in high school, sends out these middle school love letters.
Oh my God.
Middle school crushes. So the story is about this poor girl having to deal with the repercussions of these love letters. And I'll be honest, I've read the books because I like to read. I watched the first movie and I loved it, but I don't really like the male lead. So I didn't watch the second two movies. Not so much the actor, like I don't have a problem with him, but I don't like the character. So I didn't feel the need to watch the movies.
Fair enough.
However, I think it shows that letter writing, sometimes it seems antiquated, is always kind of relevant.
Oh, it's you're spot on. I mean, I love that letter writing is something that shows up in kids' books, in middle grade books, in YA, in historical fiction, in nonfiction, in biographies, in everything. Letter writing is the first form of autobiography that anyone has. And it is something that will continue. If a Pulitzer Prize winning author is writing a book about letters, and they got in touch with me through Penpalooza, and they were asking a bunch of questions. It's really intense to email a Pulitzer Prize writer or Pulitzer Prize winner.
Because I don't doubt it.
Like, I use Grammarly for work, but I've never used it for like a personal email before. But it was like 2 o'clock in the morning, and I was like, is this too wordy? But anyway, they were asking about letters, and they asked me if I thought that this pen pal exchange, Penpalooza, would continue after the quarantine. And frankly, I don't think that it will in the strength that it is now. It is, you know, it's a big thing on Twitter. There's hundreds of people who are sending postcards, gift packages, you know, this morning I got 13 pieces of mail, one of which is from a complete stranger I've never met before. And it's 3 watercolor paintings of flowers because they had them and they wanted to send them to me. So, Oh yeah. I mean, it's just like it, there's a whole other thing there, but letter writing has a time and a place. And right. There's a reason why I think this is a very natural kind of drawback to the beginning of the episode, maybe a nice circle. There's a reason why there are so many World War II letters on the market, and I use so many because there's actually not many, but why it's more World War II than anything else. It's right. A huge time in history that people were writing letters, and the pandemic is a big time in history that people are writing letters.
Absolutely. I always think, you know, our theme for this season is close to home, stories that make you feel like home, have a sense of place, etc. I feel like we've done a pretty good job of kind of connecting the letters to a sense of home. But on a personal note, for me, when I started going to college, what I was really excited about all those years ago was that I was going to be able to write letters to my friends. Mm-hmm. And I wrote letters to all my friends all the time, all sorts of things. I have a great friend who has this project called the Happiness Project, where she sends a letter to a group every month with words of encouragement. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's so many times where I'm like watching a Jane Austen movie or whatever. I'm like, I need to just write a letter to my friend and just send it off, see what happens. And even this is dorky, but shout out to friend of the pod, frequent host Allison O'Brien. We're in a letter LARP. We're in a letter LARP where we're doing like a D&D campaign via writing letters. For me, getting a letter just is comfortable, and it brings me so much joy.
It is so heartwarming to hear, you know, I was quiet there while you were like being very modest about being a dork, because it is very important to me that, especially now in this, you know, weird time that the pandemic has been, that people be allowed to express themselves, especially people, you know, who might not be living with family or with partners or things like that. And letter writing has been a huge outlet for many in Penpalooza who are by themselves around the world, because it is kind of externalizing that inner monologue. And one of the main things that we get a lot of questions about on Twitter, especially, it would be, how do I start a letter? My days are so boring. I don't want to tell anybody, you know, my day has been the same since March 15th, 2020. Like, it's not that interesting. And there are people who will reply, and it's a beautiful, wonderful place. There are people who will reply, and they'll be like, pick a piece of, you know, art that you have in your house and describe that piece, just that piece. Like, just write a letter about that painting or that poster or that mug or that whatever it is. Because I think there's a lot of pressure on people to write these like great letters of, you know, great men sort of thing.
Right.
And yeah, that's not the case. I got a postcard the other day from a person that was just like, I forget what the direct line was, but it was something like, you know, rainbows make the world a brighter place. You are a rainbow. And I was like, oh, thank you.
I love that.
And it was like, it was 2 lines on a postcard, and it cost $1.50 to send to me. And all day I was like, I'm a rainbow.
In addition to everything that we've said about letters and feeling, is there something specific that maybe this story makes you feel a connection to home, or letter writing in general gives you a connection to home?
So I haven't seen my mom in 67 weeks. Mm. I haven't seen my dad in probably, it was a year in January, so we'll say like 55 weeks, probably plus. One of the things which we have as a family is flea market love letters. So yesterday I got a box of about 400 old letters sent to me from my parents, and we were on a video call, and I was like, I want to open it on camera like YouTube, and my parents were like, oh my god. And so I opened it, and I kept pulling stuff. My mother put it together, by the way, and I would take stuff out, and she would go, what's that? And I'd be like, old mail. And she was like, oh, I didn't open the envelope, it was just okay. And then I would open something else, and she'd be like, what's that? And I'd be like, mom, old mail, you know, 90% of this box is old mail. It was Girl Scout cookies and old mail. But
perfect.
I have not seen my parents in that long because of COVID, because of travel, because of isolating, all that kind of stuff, self-quarantine. Right. And And letter writing is not something that we are going to do as a trio. It's that's just not how, and I regret that that's not something that I'll have for my grand, for my kids to have about their grandparents, whatever it is. But the fact that we have collecting the letters is a big thing that has gotten me through the pandemic. It's just, it's very special to know that, you know, you yourself, I could tell immediately once we got started talking that you're a letter lover. You're a person who's into this and doesn't necessarily think it's weird that I have 400 pieces of dead people's mail in my spare room. Some people do. And I'm just very lucky that, you know, while I'm apart from my family, we can have this kind of, you know, my dad will send me a text at like 4 o'clock in the morning, our time. This is midnight, his time. And he's like, just won an eBay auction, 17 World War One letters. And I'm like, great.
That's a beautiful connection to home. I love that.
That's my little close to home.
I guess it's time to say goodbye.
I'm so glad we've had this time together.
Before we say goodbye, if people want to learn more about you and your projects, about love letters or letters in general, how can they do that?
Flea Market Love Letters is on Instagram at Flea Market Love Letters. And we just revamped our website, which is www.fleamarketloveletters.com. I'm very literal when I name things. we have a monthly newsletter that comes out every third Thursday. So that is full of letter stories from around the internet. So your basic hits for man publishes parents World War II letters, articles. I send out a bunch of those. I send out blog articles that I write myself. Currently, I'm doing a series for the year called Letter Writing Through the Decades, where every month we look at a different letter writing guide. Recently, we looked at a How to Write Love Letters book from 1914. So that was fun for Valentine's Day. That was a World War One window. And so follow us on Instagram, find us on the website. And recently we launched a YouTube channel. So the YouTube channel is, again, Flea Market Love Letters. And that will be where we will be posting episodes of our new interview series with collectors, letter lovers, authors about nonfiction and fiction letter books. And that is coming in spring or summer 2021.
Awesome. Fantastic. I'm so excited to learn more about it and to follow that series. Big fan.
Big fan of the show, Talia. Big fan of the show. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. Thank you so much for coming. Once Upon a Time, a storytelling podcast, was produced by Talia Smith and Emily Joba. You can buy us a coffee to support this podcast at buymeacoffee.com/onceuponatimepc. Our guest today was Liz McGuire, and our story was of the Flea Market Love Letters. Our featured artist this week was Samuel J. Lemberger. You can check out their work on our Instagram and in our show notes. Music is Heart of Acceptance by John Bartman. Our Instagram is at A Storytelling Podcast, and our email is astorytellingpodcast@gmail.com. Like us on Facebook, too. You can listen in on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you're listening right now. Links to all of our resources are in the show notes and on our website. The end.